Welcome to the deep dive, you know, where we cut through all the noise and sift through the reports, really to pull out the essential insights, the stuff you need to be properly well-informed. Today, we're doing a deep dive into an investment analysis report focused on the National Bank of Canada. That's TSX, ticker NA. Our mission today, well, to really unpack what makes this bank tick, what makes it unique, and there are some monumental changes happening right now. We want to understand what that means for its future. Think of it as a story, really, a transformation story for Canada's sixth largest DSEB. That's domestically, it's systemically important bank. Basically, it means they're pretty crucial to Canada's whole financial setup.
And it really is a pivotal moment. You could call it a strategic inflection point for National Bank. It's fundamental. We're talking about a reshaping of its identity, its actual geographic footprint across Canada, and importantly, its growth path going forward. A huge part of this is that landmark acquisition of Canadian Western Bank, CWB. That closed, what, February 2025?
That's right.
And this isn't just, you know, another deal. It signals a major strategic shift for one of Canada's famous Big Six banks. We need to get into that.
Definitely. But okay, before we jump into the CWB piece, let's set the scene. What did National Bank look like before this big move? Founded way back, 1859, headquartered in Montreal, Quebec. And historically, the smallest of the Big Six, right? Based on assets.
Yeah, by total assets, about $462 billion as of late 2024, serving roughly 2.9 million clients. Still big, but smallest of that group.
And the really defining thing pre-CWB was that Quebec concentration. I mean, the numbers kind of stagger.
It is. 49% of 2024 revenues coming straight out of Quebec.
Almost half. Right. For a major national bank, that's, well, that's unusual.
Highly unusual. And it really underscores why this CWB deal is so significant. It's a direct move to change that exact dynamic.
Makes sense. But even with that concentration, their business model was quite distinct. Four main parts, right?
That's right. You've got the core, personal and commercial banking, the PNC unit. Traditionally very strong in Quebec, stable. Then wealth management. They're actually a leader here, known for what they call an open architecture approach. Quite innovative.
Right.
Third, and this is really crucial to understanding National Bank, financial markets. This has been called their, quote, critical engine of profitability.
The powerhouse segment.
Absolutely. A real differentiator, delivering record results sometimes, punching way above its weight in terms of overall profit contribution. It's an outsized piece of the pie.
Okay. And the fourth?
That's the U.S. Specialty Finance and International, or USS F&I. This includes Credigy, which handles U.S. consumer loans, and also ABA Bank over in Cambodia, which is actually a leading bank there.
Interesting mix.
It is. And that outsized contribution from financial markets, that's really key to their whole story, their performance historically.
Right. The ROE numbers were impressive.
Exactly. Consistently beating the industry average. You know, the 16.7% in fiscal year 2024, for example. Strong returns. But, and this is the big but.
The concentration risk.
Precisely. Too much reliance on Quebec for the bread and butter PNC, and arguably more importantly, having earnings so heavily tied to those, let's face it, volatile capital markets.
So that vulnerability was building even with the high profits.
It really was. It created a specific kind of strategic fragility. And understanding that context, those strengths and the weaknesses, that's critical. It explains exactly why CWB wasn't just, you know, a nice to have. It felt strategically necessary.
Okay, that totally sets the stage. So this regional player, strong in Quebec, big in markets, looks out at the Canadian banking scene. And as you said, it's dominated by the Big Six.
A functional oligopoly, really. That's the term often used.
Right. These six banks control, what, 93 to 97% of all banking assets in the country. It's massive.
It is. You've got the giants, RBC and TD, both around 22% market share. Scotiabank, maybe 15%. BMO, 14%. CIBC, 11%.
And National Bank, even after buying CWB, will be around 6%, still the smallest of the six.
Still the smallest, yes, but now with a much broader national footprint. But that concentration, that oligopoly structure, it creates this incredible protective moat.
Yeah, stability, consistent profits. We saw that in 2008, right? The global crisis hit, but Canadian banks stood strong. No failures, no bailouts needed.
Exactly. A testament to the structure and regulation. But here's the flip side, the paradox for National Bank within that moat.
Okay.
Stability is great, but it makes significant organic growth really tough domestically. Where do you grab share when the incumbents are so entrenched?
Good point. And the competitive landscape isn't staying still either, is it?
Not at all. You've got the fintech disruptors chipping away at different pieces. You've got big tech companies potentially eyeing financial services. The pressure is definitely increasing.
And the government's trying to stir things up a bit too.
Yeah, there are initiatives aimed at boosting competition. We're expecting consumer-driven banking, basically Canada's version of open banking, to roll out by 2026 or so.
Giving people more control over their data.
Exactly. And there are efforts to make mortgage switching easier, less friction, lower cost for consumers to move their mortgage.
So for National Bank, it's defend your core, but you absolutely have to find new growth avenues.
Precisely. Defend the profitable Quebec base and the market's engine, but make bold moves to grow elsewhere, which leads us directly back to
the CWB acquisition, the main event. Let's dive into that. A $5.0 billion all-share deal, like you said, closed early 2025. When I first read the analysis, Game Changer just jumped off the page. The report calls it multifaceted and transformational. Seems accurate.
I think it is. The rationale makes a lot of sense on paper. Several key drivers.
First up, the obvious one. Geographic diversification addresses that Quebec concentration head on.
Instantly. Gives them a really substantial presence right across Western Canada. That's huge.
Second, scale in commercial banking. This is big too, right?
Massive. It increases National Bank's commercial loan book by an estimated 52%. CWB was very focused on commercial lending in the West.
And third, the cross-selling potential. Enhanced product offering.
Yeah, the idea is National Bank can bring its broader suite, wealth management, capital market services, to CWB's existing established commercial client base in the West. Lots of potential there.
And they've put a number on the expected synergies.
They have. An ambitious target.
Yeah.
See $270 million in pre-tax annual synergies by the end of fiscal 2027. That's the goal they've set.
Ambitious indeed. So the strategy looks sound, but the execution, that's where the risk lies.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The integration, actually realizing those synergies, that's both the biggest potential upside, the catalyst, also, frankly, the most significant execution risk they face right now.
Have we seen any early signs on the synergy front?
We have, actually. In the Q2 2025 results, they report a $27 million in synergies already achieved for that quarter.
Okay.
If you annualize that, just straight multiplication, it suggests a run rate of about $115 million. That's already 43% of their total $270 million target. Pretty quick progress.
Where did that come from?
A mix. About $14 million from funding synergies, basically optimizing how they fund the combined balance sheet, and see $13 million from cost savings, likely early wins from overlapping functions.
So encouraging early numbers, but you still sound cautious.
Because the scale of this is just different. This is a transaction of a completely different magnitude than anything National Bank has done before. Their success over the next few years, their medium-term performance, it really feels overwhelmingly dependent on getting this single massive integration project right. Flawless execution is pretty much required.
Okay, so it's high stakes. Let's look at those Q2 2025 numbers again. The first quarter with CWB fully included, ending April 30th. What do they tell us?
Reported net income, you said, $396 million. That was actually down 1% year over year. And diluted earnings per share, EPS, down 15% to $2.17. Doesn't sound great initially.
On the surface, no. But you have to look under the hood at the adjusted numbers.
Right, stripping out one-time items related to the deal. Exactly. And the adjusted diluted EPS was $2.85. That comfortably beat what analysts were expecting, and it led to a strong adjusted return on equity, ROE, of 15.6%. Still very profitable.
And CWB's direct contribution was clear on the revenue line.
Oh, yeah. CWB added $298 million to total revenues and $251 million to net interest income just in that one quarter. You can see the immediate scale impact.
So let's break down the segments. How did P&C Personal and Commercial look with CWB folded in?
Okay, this is where the adjustments are crucial. Reported P&C net income looked terrible, down 58%.
Whoa.
But wait, that was almost entirely because National Bank took a big one-time provision for credit losses, see $230 million against CWB's existing loan book right when they acquired it. It's basically an accounting adjustment to align standards and be conservative.
Ah, okay. So if you adjust for that.
Adjusted net income for PNC actually rose 2%, hitting $316 million. Shows the underlying business is stable. And the big story, total PNC revenues jumped 25%, almost all thanks to CWB joining the fold.
Got it.
So PNC looking solid underneath that big provision. What about financial markets, the traditional engine?
Well, financial markets had an absolutely monster quarter. Exceptionally strong, record-setting were the descriptions used. Net income there surged 56% year over year to see $501 million.
500 million. That's huge.
It's massive. Think about it. Financial markets contributed over 55% of the bank's entire adjusted net income in Q2. Compare that C, $501 million, to PNC's adjusted C, $316 million.
Wow. So even with CWB boosting PNC, the markets division is still carrying a huge amount of weight.
An enormous amount. And it really underscores that ongoing dependence on a segment whose results are, you know, intrinsically tied to market conditions, which can be unpredictable.
So it brings us right back to that trade-off you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Profitability versus the quality or stability of those earnings.
Exactly. They get superior ROE, often driven by these great markets results. But the CWB deal is clearly a strategic push to rebalance, to grow that stable, predictable PNC earnings base over the long run, shifting the mix. That makes perfect sense. It's a deliberate rebalancing act. Now, let's talk capital strength and risk. National Bank seems solid here. CET1 ratio.
Very solid. Common Equity Tier 1 ratio, a key measure of capital strength, was 13.4% as of April 30, 2025. That's comfortably above regulatory minimums.
And the really striking thing was how little the $5 billion CWB deal impacted that ratio.
It's quite remarkable, actually. The acquisition itself only reduced the CET1 ratio by 9 basis points. That's tiny, 0.09% when the deal closed.
9 basis points for a $5 billion deal. How?
Well, partly through the all-share nature, but also, here's the kicker. In that same quarter, the bank generated enough profit and managed its balance sheet so well that its organic capital generation added 41 basis points to the CET1 ratio.
So the deal cost 9 points, but they generated 41 points internally in the same 3 months.
Exactly. They ended the quarter with a stronger capital ratio than before the deal closed, essentially. It more than offset the impact.
That's impressive. And they raised the dividend, too.
They did. Right after these Q2 results, the board approved a 4-cent increase in the quarterly dividend, up to $1.18 per share.
What does that signal to you? Absorbing a massive deal with basically no capital hit and immediately raising the payout.
It signals tremendous confidence from management. Confidence in the deal's rationale, confidence in their integration plan, and perhaps most importantly, confidence in the ongoing underlying earnings power and capital generation of the combined bank. It's a very strong statement.
Does that powerful capital generation maybe hint at anything about their risk approach or how they're managing things behind the scenes?
That's a fair question. It certainly shows efficient capital management, but it naturally leads us to talk about the other side of the coin, risk, specifically credit risk.
Right, with that big CWB loan book coming on board.
Exactly. Now, that slew $230 million initial provision we talked about, that was a prudent accounting step for the existing CWB performing loans at acquisition, day one alignment.
But what about the new risks?
That's the key point. CWB brings a C$37 billion loan book, which inherently increases National Bank's exposure to Western Canada's economy and also to specific sectors where CWB was strong, like commercial real estate, CRE.
And CRE is a sector regulators are watching closely right now.
Yes, OSFI, the main Canadian bank regulator, has specifically flagged CRE as an area of increasing risk. So National Bank has just bought significant exposure to that sector.
So watching future loan loss provisions will be critical.
Absolutely critical. How provisions trend on that legacy CWB portfolio, especially in segments like CRE, will be a key indicator of how this newly acquired, more concentrated risk is actually playing out.
Okay, let's shift to valuation. How is the market pricing National Bank amidst all this change? You mentioned a dichotomy. The stock trades at a trailing PE ratio of around 10.6x. That looks cheap compared to, say, RBC at 14.5x or Scotiabank near 15.7x.
It does look cheap on an earnings basis, yes.
Okay.
A noticeable discount to peers.
But then, on a price-to-book value basis, PB, it's the opposite. National Bank trades at a premium, around 1.8x book value, while TD is maybe 1.4x, BMO around 1.3x.
Exactly. That's the valuation dichotomy. And there's a reason for both sides.
Okay, break it down for us. Why the premium PB?
The premium price to book is really justified by its superior return on equity. As we said, National Bank consistently generates high ROE in that 16-18% range historically. The market rewards that efficiency, that ability to generate strong profits from its equity base, by paying more relative to its book value.
Makes sense. So why the lower PE then, if profits are strong?
The PE discount reflects the market's assessment of the quality and sustainability of those earnings.
Ah, back to the financial market's contribution.
Precisely. Because a larger slice of National Bank's earnings has historically come from that more volatile, less predictable financial market segment compared to peers with bigger, steadier retail banking operations, the market is just less willing to pay a high multiple for each dollar of its earnings. There's a perceived higher risk or lower quality attached.
So the CWB deal is aimed squarely at fixing that perception.
That's a huge part of the investment thesis. If they successfully integrate CWB, significantly grow that stable PNC earnings stream, and reduce the relative contribution from financial markets, well, that could absolutely serve as a powerful catalyst for a re-rating. The market might become willing to pay more for its earnings, narrowing that PE gap.
It's basically a bet on successful execution leading to a perception shift.
A big bet, yes. Success isn't guaranteed. Integration is hard. But the potential payoff in terms of valuation is clear.
Absolutely key. Okay, let's touch on leadership and the wider economic backdrop. Who's steering the ship through this? The CEO is Laurent Ferreira, and his background seems really relevant here.
Extremely relevant. He was previously co-head of the financial markets division. He was instrumental in building that engine we've been talking about.
So he knows that side of the business inside out. Strength there.
Definitely an asset, given how important markets is. The board also looks solid, highly independent, 15 out of 16 members. Good diversity too, 44% women, 13% visible minorities reported.
But does Ferreira's background maybe pose a challenge for the CWB integration, merging that market's culture with CWB's?
That's the potential flip side and a very real consideration. CWB's culture is often described as, you know, people first, very relationship driven, especially with its core commercial clients in the West. That's quite different from the often faster paced, more transactional nature of capital markets.
So a potential culture clash.
It's a risk. The analysis notes that the board is explicitly focused on ensuring a harmonious integration. That language isn't accidental. It's a direct signal that they recognize this cultural integration piece is significant and needs careful management. It's not just about systems and numbers.
Like merging two different types of businesses, culturally speaking.
You could think of it that way. Both successful in their own right, but operating with different rhythms and maybe different core values. Making them mesh seamlessly is a major leadership challenge.
Okay, last piece. The macro environment. What's the economic weather forecast for Canada as this integration unfolds in 2025?
The general consensus seems to be a soft landing. Most forecasts are looking for modest real GDP growth, maybe in the 1.7% to 2.0% range for 2025. Slow, but avoiding a deep recession.
And interest rates. The Bank of Canada.
Expected to keep cutting. After starting cuts in mid-2024, the expectation is for that trend to continue through 2025. Some forecasts even see the policy rate potentially getting down towards 2.25% by year-end or early 2026.
How does that backdrop slow growth, falling rates impact National Bank and the CWB integration?
Well, it's really a double-edged sword.
How so?
On the positive side, lower interest rates generally help support credit quality. So for that newly acquired C$37 billion CWB loan portfolio, falling rates could reduce the risk of defaults, especially if the economy avoids a hard landing. That's good.
Okay, the helpful edge. What's the challenging edge?
Falling rates make achieving some of those targeted synergies harder. Specifically, the funding synergies, part of that C$270 million goal, relies on optimizing funding costs. When rates are falling and yield curves are maybe flattening or inverted, interest rate spreads tend to compress. That makes it tougher to capture those funding advantages.
Ah, so it helps credit quality, but potentially squeezes some synergy potential.
Exactly. It's a trade-off they'll have to navigate. And of course, there are always broader macro risks lurking.
Like what?
Potential trade issues, maybe U.S. tariffs, depending on political winds. The Canadian housing market is always a concern, those elevated prices, high household debt levels. And as we discussed, continued worries about the commercial real estate sector specifically. All things National Bank, especially post-CWB, needs to manage carefully.
Okay, wow. We've covered a lot of ground. Let's try and distill this down for you, the listener. We've taken a real deep dive into National Bank of Canada today. I think the key takeaways are pretty clear. First, this is absolutely a bank in the middle of a massive intentional transformation. It's actively shifting from being primarily a Quebec-centric regional powerhouse to becoming a truly national competitor. And that CWB acquisition is the cornerstone of that strategy. Second, it's a fascinating story about balancing things, balancing that historically superior profitability, which was really turbocharged by its strong financial markets division, against a clear strategic goal, achieving more stable, more predictable earnings growth. And that's where boosting the personal and commercial bank via CWB comes in. Third, its valuation right now really tells that story. You see the premium price to book multiple. That reflects the market respecting its ability to generate high returns, but the lower price to earnings multiple. That shows the market's caution about the historical volatility or perceived quality of those earnings, heavily weighted to markets. And finally, and this is maybe the most important point, the success of the CWB integration, hitting those synergy targets, managing the new risks, and crucially, blending the cultures, that is the central variable. It's what will likely determine the bank's future path and whether the market ultimately re-rates the stock.
And all of that complexity, all those moving parts, the integration challenge, the shifting competitive scene, the tricky macro environment, it really raises a key question for you listening to this. As you watch National Bank over the next year or two, given everything we've discussed, what specific things would you look for? What metrics in their earnings reports or what strategic announcements would you focus on most closely to really gauge whether this bold, ambitious transformation is truly on track and succeeding? Something to think about.